Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sustainable Sustainability, brought to you by Stewardship Asia Centre. With me is my co-host Rajiv Peshwaria, the centre's CEO and the author of the book Sustainable Sustainability. Today we're speaking to Ho Kwon Ping, founder and executive chairman of Banyan Tree Holdings, the hospitality group well known in Asia for its sustainability-conscious approach to business. I began by asking him to outline his leadership style and philosophy.
I'm not a very good example. I, by now, in this stage of my life, I give talks about leadership theories and other things and so on about it. I can, and knowing my style of leadership is quite flawed, I've emphasized the need for authenticity in leadership. Basically, my main message to all my colleagues is that I'm a leader simply by virtue of the fact that I thought of what I wanted to do. And I think thought leadership is at the very source of leadership itself. And that's why my book, Asking Why, is about how you develop thought leadership. But I think a big problem I've seen is that so many leaders thrust in the position of leadership and reading so many books at airport bookstores about servant leadership and 20 different ways to be a good leader and this and that. They all try to be leaders, but we don't get there. And my main message is to be authentic, meaning to recognize your own flaws, try to improve them, to not try to be what you are not. And because I am a very impatient person, that's probably one of my biggest flaws. So I've always said that my way of being able to have people stay with me all these years is that I often tell people after I have exhibited my flaws, what my flaws are. I think people can easily sense fakeness.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, and so many leaders are actually quite fake.
Where are you now in this age of ESG? What are your leadership thoughts as opposed to your leadership practices?
Okay. Again, developed purely through experience, although I've read books on leadership and so on, I found that the most effective way about thinking about leadership is it has to be much from your coming from within yourself. And I have actually said many times that the source of leadership is in the ability to ask why, and therefore the asking why is essentially the spirit of critical inquiry. Only when you have questioned the orthodoxy and not necessarily being a rebel, but you've questioned it and you've come to your own conclusions about what one should think and do, that is the very essence of leadership. Mm. Because leadership means you do something and people follow you. That's essentially what it means to be a leader.
Exactly. And with that vision, that with what you've thought through as to how you see the future, you want to create a different future.
Right.
You want to challenge convention and conventional wisdom that, yes, everybody says this is the truth. I don't think so. I want to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's leadership, isn't it?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And,
I couldn't agree
more.
And on
the point of, stewardship, I think it's a very good term that people use nowadays because I've looked at within my own business and my own role in life, I have for our much older family business, which is 75 years old, and which my older son is doing now, I was actually more a custodian. I wasn't really a steward. And there's a very big difference in family businesses too, and I do talk about this sometimes. In family businesses, there's also a very big difference between stewardship and custodianship,
mm-hmm.
and therefore for all businesses too. A custodian really doesn't do very much. Doesn't really want to rock the boat, and he just is a custodian. Like in a library or in a museum, you don't rock the boat. You just make sure it's safe and you pass it on to the next generation. A steward implies that same overriding value of continuity, but during your period as a steward, you also take initiatives. You also can transform a company. You can have transformative stewardship, but transformative custodianship is kind of like a oxymoron.
Yes, I couldn't agree more because that is why, when you look at the word stewardship or a steward in the dictionaries, what you get is a steward on a ship, a steward on a plane who takes care of you, or a financial steward who takes care of your money. So the actual meaning of the word steward is actually all like the custodian that you're talking about, which is why we came up with this term steward leader. Mm-hmm. That a steward leader, a leader with stewardship at the heart, is not only a custodian, but also builds a better future mm-hmm. and keeps other people in mind as well, not just himself.
Mm-hmm. But that distinction between stewardship and leadership is actually precisely what we're here to talk about, I think. Because business school teaches business as science, whereas what we're trying to explore here is the idea that that's not sufficient. Employees, people who live in the community, people who are suppliers to the business, all these people are part of that ecosystem. And taking care of them is as important as taking care of the bottom line.
Yes, but I'm here very cynical about all this. I think the capitalist system is broken. When you have a world which is hugely dominated by private equity, and what is private equity's time frame? 5 plus 2 years maximum. You must exit as short a time as possible. As long as you have a capitalist system which rewards hugely extremely short-term gains, you are never going to get a sustainable corporate environment.
Well, the majority of the CEOs, particularly in countries where and markets where it's not as much family-owned, that it's more corporate. What's your advice? What do we do? This sounds like a doomed scenario where nothing can be done because the system is broken. It's got to be some way out.
Until people begin to realize, until society as a whole and investors begin to realize that their goals in terms of investment returns have to change, I don't think the world is going to change. So to me, you cannot get the change coming from CEOs. Hmm. The change have to come from the investment institutions. Mm. Now, when that happens, I think that begins to change. So to me, leadership change is very critical, but it's not leadership change at the very hero CEO level that everybody writes about. Mm. They are themselves just as much victims of the game because they are there to maximize their gains. Only if the big institutions like the sovereign wealth funds begin to change and activists investor associations begin to change, then CEO behavior will change.
I'm not quite sure I understand why you're ruling out the role of not only CEOs, but the general public in this conversation. Because I would have thought that the ESG movement and the climate change movement and the shareholder and stakeholder awareness movement, all of these are contributing to a broader mindset shift that is absolutely necessary.
I totally agree. I think my point is, the general public, as represented by activist investors, I don't mean the activists who want more money, but the activists who actually are pushing for DEI and other things.
And reform, yeah.
And it has had clearly a strong effect. But you cannot expect a CEO himself or herself devoid of pressures coming from the board that affects his or her compensation to be so altruistic that minus all these pressures will on his own accord say, I will do all these great things even though it's not been pushed onto me, and I will voluntarily do things to reduce my own compensation because I'm so altruistic. That is what I don't think is realistic.
So where does ethics come in? Just because the system is pushing the wrong kind of incentives. As CEO, I say, well, I am helpless. I can't do anything about it. Therefore, I have to do what the system thinks.
Nobody will
do.
Tell you that.
Is that. No.
No,
but
they'll never tell
that. That's what's happening,
right?
The fact that every CEO is doing what you're saying means that they're succumbing to the pressure.
Correct.
They're conveniently in their head saying, there's nothing I can do. It's the pressure. Is that ethical?
It may not be ethical, but I would say it is realistic. I guess point of difference we have here is that I think leverage has to be applied at all levels. Leverage through your coaching CEOs to be more ethical and to be more sustainability minded. That is necessary, of course. I think all I'm saying is that the pressure must come from all around.
Well, for sure.
You don't expect a CEO to wake up one day enlightened and doing all these great things. I'm only skeptical about the idea that a CEO is such an ethical animal that he does not live within a societal framework and a personal framework of wanting to quite validly earning the most money, not for selfish reasons, but for the family.
This goes back to your point, right? You were saying that all these movements and all this attention on what is ethical and what is it that we need to do about climate change and what does government do, what does business do, the movement seems to have started. At least if you look at the decibel level.
Seems to have a lot of traction.
Well, yeah, but let me be a professional cynic for you here, if I may, to be provocative.
Yeah.
Look at everybody talking about greenwashing now.
Oh, yes.
And look at ESG. Everybody is now turning against ESG. What at one time an SDG goes, companies, I've found, are very quick to pick up whatever they need to pick up.
And game the system.
And game the system.
Absolutely. But the greenwashing backlash has been rapid. The momentum is towards pressure on companies and not towards gaming the system.
Correct.
And as we speak, the US courts have just ruled that Elon Musk's $56 billion compensation package just cannot hold.
Correct.
So there is pressure coming from all over the place.
Correct.
The question I have, though, is, I mean, a lot of the framing that we've put here right now has been in the context of the system globally and at the high end of financialization of capital. We live in Asia. We're talking private companies. We're talking small scale. Mm-hmm. We're talking issues where the leaders, like yourself, are more concerned with their families and their localities than perhaps the head of KKR might be, right? Is that not a different scenario? Is the ethical dimension that Rajiv posits here more relevant to that society, that community, those participants?
Yes, it is. I think you pointed out a very good point. The flip side of this is that too many governments felt that everything that was worthwhile doing came from the West. In Singapore, all our best and brightest go and study in Harvard. All our best and brightest are hired by the titans of the financial system, the big companies. So you have a situation where the family companies and the SMEs actually embody what I would call ethics and values that are derived from their own experiences, whereas our best and brightest who are working for the big global companies have a totally different mindset. So even within a small place like Singapore, you would find, if you have a lot of discussions, the people who actually practice sustainability are probably those who are less articulate in it, because they actually family-owned businesses, people come out of polytechnics and they run small engineering companies or whatever. And the guys who are the most articulate are the ones who are actually embodying the values of Wall Street.
Okay, so this system, it's going to take some time to change. Voices have started, but not enough. The private equity-led system, the compensation and the incentive system is clearly driving the wrong behavior. And I make that point in my book as well, by the way, that we are using carrots and sticks to drive behavior towards sustainability. Well, that's exactly what broke the back of shareholder-centric capitalism in the first place. Carrots and sticks-based approach and nothing else, right? Okay. And now we're giving you green incentives, and now we're giving you lots and lots of regulation, and we think that that's going to save the world. No. The question is, as we are waiting for the system to get better, what needs to happen? Is it a question of education? Should we tackle it at the school and college level?
You said something that I'm not sure I agree with. You say, as we wait for the system to get better, what do we focus on? I would say my answer to this is we must be the ones who start to change the system. And I'm cynical about the system, but that has not prevented me on all public occasions speaking out against the system and saying, what must change? Mm. So I'm a tiny drop in an ocean, but I'm doing my little bit as a tiny drop in the ocean. Mm. The Stewardship Asia Center is doing a bigger drop in the ocean, but we're all drops in the ocean. I would say, what are the levers of change that we should focus on? Education, investor activism, so that we collectively change the system from within and from below, and not think that the system will change voluntarily from the leadership itself. If we all sit back and wait and say, all we need to do is try to enlighten these CEOs, treat them more as heroes, that to me is not the solution.
Mm. But it goes to my earlier point of, unless we do have those enlightened CEOs, those stakeholders with an opinion, those members of the public who want to speak out, unless those individual drops coalesce together, we won't see change. They must all come together.
Of course. I want to go back to the point that you made about leadership, right? You started out this conversation by saying a leader is somebody who sits back and challenges convention. Somebody who says, asks why. So in other words, you're a change maker, mm-hmm. right? So when we're talking about this doomed system, and I feel like we are justifying almost these poor CEOs who only make $38 million a year because, you know, it's the private equity system. I have to do it for my family. I'm sorry. What should they do? Or what choices do they have in this system? If we look at your own definition of leadership. Well, because they are clearly in a position of power. They're running big corporations. Are they that helpless?
My cynicism is not tantamount to passiveness. I believe in idealistic cynicism. I don't believe in idealism where everything is fine, and if only everybody were to be like John Lennon and say, make love, not war. Yeah. If we all think positive, the world will change. If we all want sustainability, sustainability will come. I love the song Imagine, but I don't think in the real world, we just imagine a world of peace, you get peace. So my cynicism does not lead to passivity. Mine is a cynicism which leads to activity. So it's a kind of idealistic cynicism.
May I then ask you, why is your group, the Banyan Tree Group, so focused on the sustainability agenda? You make efforts to lead in this front.
Yeah, because we did it from the very beginning.
Why? Oh, if you don't believe in your ability to influence the system.
I think everybody's values are most powerful when grounded in experience. We started on this journey before the word sustainability came about, before ESG and so on. And that was from my own experience with taking over Laguna Phuket, which was a completely denuded tin mine and so on. And I wasn't thinking about sustainability at that time. We just happened to come across something that I bought out of foolishness, and it was completely devastated and polluted. And in having to rehabilitate it, we began to realize the power of business to either destroy an environment or to rehabilitate it. So that was a first very experiential encounter with the power of business to do good or to do bad. We then came across, at that time, the environmental or green movement in the West, which was, in my view, not holistic. It was one where saving a single endangered snail species, even at the risk of resulting in an entire community of 10,000 people having no income, was worth it. It's kind of like a Greenpeace movement, very powerfully focused, but without considering the human impact. And so we developed, 30 years ago, our definition of sustainability, which was embodied in the slogan which exists today, empowering people, embracing the environment. And that was a clear counter to the Greenpeace activists who would sometimes come to us and say, you should be doing this and doing that. And we were saying, we will not do things that are just for the environment. You have the community to have to deal with. So these became embedded as part of our core value. And we do it now. We're doing so much work with communities. We're doing work on sustainability because it has become a value which comes from within now.
And that being the practical point at this very moment in time for almost every CEO, given what we said about everything about the systemic pressures on CEO, the practical reality of every business owner in Asia, small business owner in Asia, is exactly the same as yours. They are faced with choices as to what to prioritize in their development process. They can look at their capital allocation plans and they can say, I can, in the short term, return better bottom line numbers if I take a course of action that I know to be unsustainable, or I can look at a slightly longer term picture and capital allocate according to plans which will yield a much better, more ethical long-term outlook. Are these not the people that we need to address in order to generate the kind of critical momentum for change?
Of course. And you've also pointed out, in Asia, in some ways, it's actually a bit easier because with even public companies being mainly quasi-state-owned or family-owned, you only need to change the major shareholders. I find with so many SMEs, many of the founders never heard about ESG and they're just doing what they're doing. Their children are now of a totally different generation. They then talk to their parents and the patriarch of the family about ESG and about sustainability. And once you then change the mind of the CEO, who is also the main shareholder, it's easier to do things because they basically control the company.
I think your point about being a cynic and that cynicism leading you to think differently, I think is a very well taken point. That cynicism seen as a negative word, in your case, no.
No.
Second thing I found very interesting just now in listening to you was that you had that choice mm-hmm. when you bought Laguna Phuket, either to go, as Taimur just said, for the short term maximization, or to look at it in more holistic ways and take a longer term view. And you made that choice. And that has paid rich dividends to your business over the years. Recently, just last week, I was in a conference in the US, in Colorado, and I met this gentleman who is on the cusp of finding, he's already done it, of harnessing hydrogen, mm-hmm. but not hydrogen as hydrogen, but hydrogen through ammonia. Mm-hmm. to power vehicles and this like and that. And the technology is tested, this, that, and the other. He's waiting for absolutely final approvals. But private equity and everybody's chasing him, saying this is going to be huge. And take our money. And he's not taking anybody's money. He says, look, I plan to open it up. My business is going to make tons of money anyway, but I'm going to make it open source mm-hmm. because the whole industry needs to develop. So if you want to give me money, Mr. Private Equity, know that I'm going to open it up. I'm telling you now. So come on board, because we will all make lots of money rather than just you and me keeping it closed and making money. Again, he's making a choice. And my hope is that there are 2 out of every 10 people that make choices like the one you made and the one that he's making. So on that note, as we close, what is your advice to the average CEO in the West and in the East?
My advice, again, on the issue, it ties in about frailty. And a very old saying is, know thyself. Mm. I think everyone has a core of altruism in themselves. And I think if you don't fool yourself, but you know your own weaknesses, you know, at the same time, you know your altruism, I think you'll be a better leader who can effect change. Meaning, if you are a CEO, I hardly think CEOs are bad. I'm part of the whole system and I have many friends who are there. But I think a CEO who recognizes that he is torn and he's in a dilemma because his own personal compensation is based on short-term considerations. And he knows it. And he knows that dilemma. And he confronts that dilemma rather than try to hide it and say, and in fact, do things that are for the short term, but cloak it as if he's also doing ESG stuff, which then leads to greenwashing and leads to inauthenticity. I think all of us should recognize we have that good part of ourselves, we have that selfish part of ourselves. And if we recognize it in ourselves and create a balance, you still have to increase shareholder value, but you recognize you are not maximizing it because there are other trade-offs you need to consider. So as you're honest with yourself and you can articulate that dilemma to yourself, to your staff, to your shareholders, I think you will then be able to effect that change. It's the pretension of being one thing and in actuality being something else that I am most against and I'm most cynical against.
Can you also consider that question from a very practical perspective, mm-hmm. from a very hands-on perspective? There are going to be any number of business people in Asia and around the world who are in your position, perhaps companies the size of yours or smaller companies, who perhaps have the capacity to act according to their conscience as opposed to being forced into a situation of shareholder demands for returns. What kind of advice would you give them?
I think that's a good point, because I think if you are a CEO, family business or big business, and you recognize you're going to be doing some things that might not be maximizing shareholder value, share price value and so on, and you're just doing it and you're just not maximizing it, but you're not showing how you're really doing tangible good through your own company, I think that also doesn't carry much weight. But if, for example, while you are already educating yourself and your whole community that you are going to be pursuing goals other than maximizing shareholder value, if you can then demonstrate through the channeling of income that you would otherwise have gotten, like some people give 2% of their revenue to their own to their own foundation, which they then get the employees to be very much involved in, and there and then they actually do real good at a small level, meaning tangible good, helping schools, helping plant trees or whatever it is. That conscientization of the whole community you're within, I think is very powerful. So what we do is we recognize that we don't always do things that maximize shareholder value. So you have to set up alternative goals and actually then be pushing yourself to those alternative goals. So we now have a Biantry Global Foundation where we put some money and our customers' money. It's a foundation that tries to actually do projects. We have sustainability champions within every single hotel that actually launches projects at the grassroots level among our own staff. And that becomes powerful because they do their own thing and they then share that value. They then see the good that they are doing. They go to schools, they do all, you know, everything from cleaning of beaches to creating schools. We actually finance an international kindergarten in Phuket for the last 30 years. And it's all free for all staff. So once you demonstrate that you are channeling some money that could otherwise have gone into dividends, but you're doing it for good causes, and the people you are working with actually participate in doing good, I think that is very powerful because it's not just talk about ESG, it's just not talk about saving the planet. It's every human being themselves want to do good in a tangible manner. We don't really practice philanthropy. We take our money and we do things with it. We just don't give it away. Because when we do things with it and our associates do things with it, the whole community feels empowered.
Yeah, it's all about finding profitable solutions to today's challenges. Listening to you, I can't but help think that this culture where at every hotel, projects are being held and each hotel CEO is being accountable is because you sort of trickle down the thinking and the values, and now your next generation is doing the same, which is why that culture is permeating through the organization.
Yes, yeah. And now I don't have to do that. You see, you realize as a CEO when you have to start the culture. But frankly, if I were to keel over tomorrow, all the hotels now have such strong values of sustainability. Everybody knows when you join this company, it has sustainable values. They join partly because of that. I could be hit by a bus tomorrow, my children could be all hit by a bus tomorrow, and unless a CEO comes in who tries to change it, the people within already are proud of what they're doing. And that's real change.
And I think that's a great place to end it, because what we've done is we've started off from a position where you were articulating a cynical mm-hmm. and hard-nosed attitude towards the system in general, and where we've ended up is you actually giving a very, very nuanced and interesting response as to so much that can be done despite that systemic problem.
Oh, I totally agree. But at the same time, I don't believe in starry-eyed idealism. I think only when you recognize the source of the problem, when you're cynical about how easy it is to change and that it's going to be very difficult to change and yet you're willing to try, then you will get a realistic kind of change, because you don't think overnight it's going to change, because there are embedded reasons why that change is not easy.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Be the change you want to see in the world.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. You can learn more about the ideas that underpin this series of Sustainable Sustainability by visiting stewardshipcommons.com. Until next time, goodbye.